Chapter 76. Time to form a guess to whom they belonged. They walked into the very center of the party who were expecting their arrival, a fact which was first notified to the Pickwickians by the loud hurrah apostrophe which burst from old Wardle's lips when they appeared in sight. First, there was Wardle himself, looking, if that were possible, more jolly than ever. Then there were Bella and her faithful Trundle, and, lastly, there were Emily and some 8 or 10 young ladies, who had all come down to the wedding, which was to take place next day, and who were in as happy and important a state as young ladies usually are, on such momentous occasions. And they were, one and all, startling the fields and lanes, far and wide, with their frolic and laughter. The ceremony of introduction, under such circumstances, was very soon performed, or we should rather say, that the introduction was soon over, without any ceremony at all. In 2 minutes thereafter, Mr. Pickwick was joking with the young ladies who wouldn't come over the stile while he looked, or who, having pretty feet and unexceptionable ankles, preferred standing on the top rail for 5 minutes or so, declaring that they were too frightened to move with as much ease, and absence of reserve or constraint, as if he had known them for life. It is worthy of remark, too, that Mr. Snodgrass offered Emily far more assistance than the absolute terrors of the stile, although it was full 3 feet high, and had only a couple of stepping stones, would seem to require. While one black-eyed young lady in a very nice little pair of boots with fur around the top was observed to scream very loudly when Mr. Winkle offered to help her over. All this was very snug and pleasant. And when the difficulties of the stile were at last surmounted, and they once more entered on the open field, old Wardle informed Mr. Pickwick how they had all been down in a body to inspect the furniture and fittings up of the house, which the young couple were to tenant after the Christmas holidays, at which communication Bella and Trundle both colored up as red as the fat boy after the taproom fire. And the young lady with the black eyes and the fur round the boots whispered something in Emily's ear, and then glanced archly at Mr. Snodgrass, to which Emily responded that she was a foolish girl, but turned very red, notwithstanding, and Mr. Snodgrass, who was as modest as all great geniuses usually are, felt the crimson rising to the crown of his head, and devoutly wished, in the inmost recesses of his own heart, that the young lady aforesaid, with her black eyes, and her archness, and her boots with the fur round the top, were all comfortably deposited in the adjacent county. But if they were social and happy outside the house, what was the warmth and cordiality of their reception when they reached the farm? The very servants grinned with pleasure at sight of Mr. Pickwick, and Emma bestowed a half-demure, half-impudent, and all-pretty look of recognition on Mr. Tubman, which was enough to make the statue of Bonaparte in the passage unfold his arms and clasp her within them. The old lady was seated with customary state in the front parlor, but she was rather cross, and, by consequence, most particularly deaf. She never went out herself, and like a great many other old ladies of the same stamp, she was apt to consider it an act of domestic treason if anybody else took the liberty of doing what she couldn't. So, bless her old soul, she sat as upright as she could, in her great chair, and looked as fierce as might be, and that was benevolent after all. Mother, apostrophe said Wardle, apostrophe Mr. Pickwick. You recollect him? Apostrophe, never mind, apostrophe replied the old lady, with great dignity. Don't trouble Mr. Pickwick about an old creeter like me. Nobody cares about me now, and it's very natural they shouldn't. Apostrophe here the old lady tossed her head, and smoothed down her lavender-colored silk dress with trembling hands. Come, come, ma'am, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, I can't let you cut an old friend in this way. I have come down, expressly to have a long talk, and another rubber with you, and we'll show these boys and girls how to dance a minuet before they're 8 and 40 hours older. Apostrophe, the old lady was rapidly giving way, but she did not like to do it all at once, so she only said, Ah, I can't hear him. Apostrophe, nonsense, mother, apostrophe, said Wardle. Come, come, don't be cross, there's a good soul. Recollect Bella, come, you must keep her spirits up, poor girl. Apostrophe, the good old lady heard this, for her lip quivered as her son said it. But H has its little infirmities of temper, and she was not quite brought round yet. So, she smoothed down the lavender-colored dress again, and turning to Mr. Pickwick said, Ah, Mr. Pickwick, young people was very different when I was a girl. Apostrophe, no doubt of that, ma'am, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, and that's the reason why I would make much of the few that have any traces of the old stock. And saying this, Mr. Pickwick gently pulled Bella towards him, and bestowing a kiss upon her forehead, bade her sit down on the little stool at her grandmother's feet. Whether the expression of her countenance, as it was raised towards the old lady's face, called up a thought of old times, or whether the old lady was touched by Mr. Pickwick's affectionate good nature, or whatever was the cause, she was fairly melted. So she threw herself on her granddaughter's neck, and all the little ill humor evaporated in a gush of silent tears. A happy party they were, that night. Sedate and solemn were the score of rubbers in which Mr. Pickwick and the old lady played together. Uproarious was the mirth of the round table. Long after the ladies had retired, did the hot elder wine, well qualified with brandy and spice, go round, and round, and round again, and sound was the sleep and pleasant were the dreams that followed. It is a remarkable fact that those of Mr. Snodgrass bore constant reference to Emily Wardle, and that the principal figure in Mr. Winkle's visions was a young lady with black eyes, an arched smile, and a pair of remarkably nice boots with fur around the tops. Mr. Pickwick was awakened early in the morning by a hum of voices and a pattering of feet, sufficient to rouse even the fat boy from his heavy slumbers. He sat up in bed and listened. The female servants and female visitors were running constantly to and fro, and there were such multitudinous demands for hot water, such repeated outcries for needles and thread, and so many half-suppressed entreaties of oh, do come and tie me, there's a dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that Mr. Pickwick in his innocence began to imagine that something dreadful must have occurred when he grew more awake and remembered the wedding. The occasion being an important one, he dressed himself with peculiar care, and descended to the breakfast room. There were all the female servants in a brand new uniform of pink muslin gowns with white bows in their caps, running about the house in a state of excitement and agitation which it would be impossible to describe. The old lady was dressed out in a brocaded gown, which had not seen the light for 20 years, saving and excepting such truant rays as had stolen through the chinks in the box in which it had been laid by, during the whole time. Mr. Trundle was in high feather and spirits, but a little nervous withal. The hearty old landlord was trying to look very cheerful and unconcerned, but failing signally in the attempt. All the girls were in tears and white muslin, except a select two or three, who were being honored with a private view of the bride and bridesmaids, upstairs. All the Pickwickians were in most blooming array, and there was a terrific roaring on the grass in front of the house, occasioned by all the men, boys, and hobbledehoys attached to the farm, each of whom had got a white bow in his buttonhole, and all of whom were cheering with might and main. Being incited thereto, and stimulated there by the precept and example of Mr. Samuel Weller, who had managed to become mighty popular already, and was as much at home as if he had been born on the land. A wedding is a licensed subject to joke upon, but there really is no great joke in the matter after all. We speak merely of the ceremony, and beg it to be distinctly understood that we indulge in no hidden sarcasm upon a married life. Mixed up with the pleasure and joy of the occasion are the many regrets at quitting home, the tears of parting between parent and child, the consciousness of leaving the dearest and kindest friends of the happiest portion of human life, to encounter its cares and troubles with others still untried, and little known natural feelings which we would not render this chapter mournful by describing, and which we should be still more unwilling to be supposed to ridicule. Let us briefly say, then, that the ceremony was performed by the old clergyman, in the parish church of Dingley Dell, and that Mr. Pickwick's name is attached to the register, still preserved in the vestry thereof, that the young lady with the black eye signed her name in a very unsteady and tremulous manner, that Emily's signature, as the other bridesmaid, is nearly illegible, that it all went off in very admirable style, that the young ladies generally thought it far less shocking than they had expected, and that although the owner of the black eyes and the arch smile informed Mr. Wardle that she was sure she could never submit to anything so dreadful, we have the very best reasons for thinking she was mistaken. To all this, we may add that Mr. Pickwick was the first who saluted the bride, and that in so doing he threw over her neck a rich gold watch and chain, which no mortal eyes but the jewelers had ever beheld before. Then, the old church bell rang as gaily as it could, and they all returned to breakfast. Where does the mince pies go, young opium eater? Said Mr. Weller to the fat boy, as he assisted in laying out such articles of consumption as had not been duly arranged on the previous night. The fat boy pointed to the destination of the pies. Worry good, said Sam, stick a bit o' Christmas in 'em. T'other dish opposite. There, now we look compact and comfortable, as the father said when he cut his little boy's head off, to cure him o' squintin'. As Mr. Weller made the comparison, he fell back a step or two, to give full effect to it, and surveyed the preparations with the utmost satisfaction. Wardle, said Mr. Pickwick, almost as soon as they were all seated, a glass of wine in honor of this happy occasion. I shall be delighted, my boy, said Wardle. Joe, damn that boy, he's gone to sleep. No, I ain't, sir, replied the fat boy, starting up from a remote corner, where, like the patron saint of fat boys the immortal Horner, he had been devouring a Christmas pie, though not with the coolness and deliberation which characterized that young gentleman's proceedings. Fill Mr. Pickwick's glass. Yes, sir. The fat boy filled Mr. Pickwick's glass, and then retired behind his master's chair, from whence he watched the play of the knives and forks, and the progress of the choice morsels from the dishes to the mouths of the company, with a kind of dark and gloomy joy that was most impressive. God bless you, old fellow! Said Mr. Pickwick. Same to you, my boy, replied Wardle. And they pledged each other, heartily. Mrs. Wardle, said Mr. Pickwick, we old folks must have a glass of wine together, in honor of this joyful event. The old lady was in a state of great grandeur just then, for she was sitting at the top of the table in the brocaded gown, with her newly married granddaughter on one side, and Mr. Pickwick on the other, to do the carving. Mr. Pickwick had not spoken in a very loud tone, but she understood him at once, and drank off a full glass of wine to his long life and happiness, after which the worthy old soul launched forth into a minute and particular account of her own wedding, with a dissertation on the fashion of wearing high-heeled shoes, and some particulars concerning the life and adventures of the beautiful Lady Tullymglower, deceased. At all of which the old lady herself laughed very heartily indeed, and so did the young ladies too, for they were wondering among themselves what on earth Grandma was talking about. When they laughed, the old lady laughed 10 times more heartily, and said that these always had been considered capital stories, which caused them all to laugh again, and put the old lady into the very best of humors. Then the cake was cut, and passed through the ring. The young ladies saved pieces to put under their pillows, to dream of their future husbands on, and a great deal of blushing and merriment was thereby occasioned. Apostrophe Mr. Miller, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick to his old acquaintance, the hard-headed gentleman, a glass of wine? Apostrophe apostrophe, with great satisfaction, Mr. Pickwick, apostrophe replied the hard-headed gentleman solemnly. You'll take me in? Apostrophe apostrophe said the benevolent old clergyman. And me, apostrophe interposed his wife. And me, apostrophe said a couple of poor relations at the bottom of the table, who had eaten and drunk very heartily, and laughed at everything. Mr. Pickwick expressed his heartfelt delight at every additional suggestion, and his eyes beamed with hilarity and cheerfulness. Ladies and gentlemen, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, suddenly rising. Here, 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 here. Apostrophe cried Mr. Weller, in the excitement of his feelings. Call in all the servants, apostrophe cried old Wardle, interposing to prevent the public rebuke which Mr. Weller would otherwise most indubitably have received from his master. Give them a glass of wine each to drink the toast in. Now, Pickwick. Apostrophe, amidst the silence of the company, the whispering of the women servants, and the awkward embarrassment of the men, Mr. Pickwick proceeded, ladies and gentlemen, no, I won't say ladies and gentlemen, I'll call you my friends, my dear friends, if the ladies will allow me to take so great a liberty. Apostrophe, here Mr. Pickwick was interrupted by immense applause from the ladies, echoed by the gentlemen, during which the owner of the eyes was distinctly heard to state that she could kiss that dear Mr. Pickwick. Whereupon Mr. Winkle gallantly inquired if it couldn't be done by deputy. To which the young lady with the black eyes replied, go away, apostrophe, and accompanied the request with a look which said as plainly as a look could do, if you can. Apostrophe, my dear friends, apostrophe resumed Mr. Pickwick, I am going to propose the health of the bride and bridegroom, God bless 'em, cheers and tears, my young friend. Trundle, I believe to be a very excellent and manly fellow, and his wife I know to be a very amiable and lovely girl, well qualified to transfer to another sphere of action the happiness which for 20 years she has diffused around her, in her father's house. Here, the fat boy burst forth into stentorian blubberings, and was let forth by the coat collar, by Mr. Weller. I wish, apostrophe added Mr. Pickwick, I wish I was young enough to be her sister's husband, cheers, but, failing that, I am happy to be old enough to be her father, for, being so, I shall not be suspected of any latent designs when I say that I admire, esteem, and love them both, cheers and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.